All right. Good morning. It's great to be back with everybody. Number of weeks we were out, and it's good to be back, getting back most of our energy and all that. Appreciate everybody's prayer and appreciate everybody just continuing to seek God. As there's some weeks we all get sick, and it's small number of us here, and then there's weeks where we're feeling great, and just that steadfastness to continue to seek him like Daniel is the heart that we all want to have. Before we start, Pat wanted to just share some sad news. Yeah, and I think even Gene, as far as I haven't known fully Ace's story, but I just feel like Gene, you've been exemplary in being a servant and in loving well. Gene and Rob and I have been getting together maybe last year or so, just every once in a while, get together over the word. And Gene always has a story like, oh, yeah, well, got a call and drove this person over here all the way down to Denver. And then I came back and it wasn't really fitting in my schedule well, but made it work. And so, Gene, I just appreciate your example of loving like Christ. And thank you, everybody, that does that. That's who we are. We are the body of Christ. We are his agents of love and care and reconciliation, and we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. And so as we go into this week of Thanksgiving, my hope is that as we finish Exodus, that it's not like this like discontinued two different worlds of we think about the Bible and things that happened thousands of years ago in Exodus, and now we live in present day, really challenging, you know, health and medical and political craziness and everything going on, and that there's somehow that God is working through our times together to say what happened thousands of years ago matters for our present moment of what we're living through today. Why we should care about our intake of news and the social media and everything that's going on, everything that runs through your mind of what concerns you, there's answers, and they've been sitting here, and they're still going to be here, and we can access the person that this book speaks about every day into all of what we talk about. And so that's the hope this week as you celebrate Thanksgiving with family, as you go through all that we go through in life, that God has called us into this journey to live with him and together as a community to live with each other. And to see God move, we're not just doing religious forms. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I don't know how many more weeks of Exodus we're going to be in. Maybe one, maybe two, maybe none. I think we're getting towards the end. But what I wanted to share this morning is we can start to get lost. And I have the same emotional reaction, right? As soon as you get done with chapter 19 in Mount Sinai, you go, okay, now I got to get through the hard stuff. And I know I should read the Bible. I know I should read through all the chapters. But from here on through until we get to Joshua, it's going to be a grind. And but I know it's like taking, you know, it's like eating my kale. I know it's good for me. It doesn't taste always the best. Here we go. I'm going to take my vitamins and vegetables. And maybe just a call for us to look a little bit differently at what God is doing here. And so just a rough breakdown. If you look at the book of Exodus, this is my just rough breakdown. The first 19 chapters are pretty exciting because there's this high overarching story that God's working through hundreds of years. And then you see Moses, and he's raised in Pharaoh's household, and then he goes off into the desert, and then God calls him, and he doesn't want to go back, and he gives chapters of excuses of why he shouldn't be used, and then he goes back. God calls him, and then God works in these plagues and in amazing ways of destroying the power and the influence and the reputation of the Egyptian gods are all brought to nothing because each and every plague specifically gives God's dominance over the Egyptian gods. And then they're rescued, and yet they start to say, where are we going to go? And they go through the Red Sea. And all of this excitement, it makes for great theater, and that's why people make movies about it. There's yet to be a movie where it's like, all right, we're going to do 2 hours of Tom Hanks playing Moses, giving instructions for how to build a tabernacle. Like, that's just not good theater. It's not exciting. Yet, I would make the case that's the whole point of what this story is about. What God was calling them out of Egypt wasn't just so that their lives would become more comfortable. What was the reason Moses gave time and time again to Pharaoh? That we may go out and worship. That we may go out and offer a sacrifice. That we may go out and be with our God. The whole purpose of bringing them out was so that they could then be with God. And as Moses, after Mount Sinai, so basically chapter 19, 20, you get a couple chapters of laws, but then there's a big chunk of instructions of what will this worship look like? What is it that God called them out to do? It wasn't just so that their lives would be free from slavery, though that did happen, but it was very specific instructions on what to build and what to do so that they could come before God and worship. And it's this whole big picture we're going to look at this morning. Okay, so we want to meet this guy named Bezalel. Okay, he's mostly the first person the Bible speaks of is like the handyman. Okay, he knows how to build. The Spirit of God has given him gifts and talents, whether that was naturally born into him and he goes, this has always just come handily to me, or it came in a supernatural way later. Bezalel has been set apart. I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I filled him with the Spirit of God, with ability and intelligence, with knowledge and all craftsmanship to devise artistic designs, to work in gold, silver, and bronze, in cutting stones for setting, and in carving wood, to work in every craft. He's crafty in a good way. Okay? And so all of what's happened, they've come to this mountain of God. God says, here's my constitution. Here's my Ten Commandments. Here's how you can be my people. And then he says, now I want this one person, along with a host of others, there's others that it mentions, to now make things, to design things, to work with gold and to work with cloth and to work with all of these things. And they're going to get to work. Where do you think they got all the gold and cloth and nice things to build with? They took them from the Egyptians. God provided as loot as they left Egypt all these things, and now they're going to refashion and use them as God would design them for worship. It's brilliant. God takes the things of this world and he says, now those are for me. And what's interesting, so Bezalel, it says he's the son of Hur. And if you remember when Pat shared about Moses' arms being lifted up in the battle that was on the mountain, Hur was one of the guys that was lifting up one of Moses' arms. Okay? So his family, Bezalel and Hur, they're kind of in that inner circle of what God is doing in the midst of the Israelites. He gets to go up on the mountain with Aaron and with Moses later. And so part of this circle of God showing, this is who I am. I am who I am. Displaying his name, his character. Hur and his family and Bezalel start to create these things. So what are they going to make? They're going to make a lot of things. They're going to make the Ark of the Covenant. They're going to make a table for bread. They're going to make lampstands, tabernacle. The tabernacle is the overarching design of all of the complex of all of this worship, okay? They're going to make altars, a court, like an outer fence, kind of like this fence around our roofing supplies. There's an outer fence of the whole thing. And the priest's garments. All of this stuff, which would take some time to make, right? But all of this is so that there's this mobile unit that they can pack up, that they can make, that they can erect wherever God would lead to worship him. And so if you look in the upper right, it gives you a general idea of the size of this whole thing. It's less than a football field, right? And Pat was mentioning he saw kind of like a rendition or a replica of it. It's not like they went to and they saw the Eiffel Tower when they made this. It really wasn't huge, but it was how God had prescribed what this worship would look like. And until the days of David and Solomon, this is where God's people came to come into his presence. Through the courts, through these sacrifices, through the veil, into this holy of holy place. And so as you read through the rest of Exodus and into Numbers, into Leviticus, into all those books, and you go, I've got to grind myself through this. What God is saying is, I really care what worship of me looks like. And why is that? So I want to show a video from the Bible Project. We watch these a lot. I just encourage you guys to continue. If you'd like things to help amplify, to help supplement your times in the Word, the Bible Project does a great job. It's great for kids. If you're teaching your kids, whatever that would look like at home, through the Word, just let's put one of these on. It's got videos through almost every book of the Bible. But here's one about the tabernacle and why it's so important, and I thought this would be timely for our morning. A little bit of a cliffhanger so that if you want to watch those other videos, you can. But what I love about that is drawing the analogy. If you were to just be in this time frame without the rest of the Old Testament and New Testament written, you would look and say, God started in this garden. He dwelt with man. Things were perfect. There was access and relationship perfectly. But like it said, they said, through sin, because of our brokenness and our disobedience, we're shut out of that. And the angels, cherubim, guard the way back in to access with God. So the tabernacle has these two cherubim guarding the way into the Holy of Holies. Do you see how in their minds they would say, this is as if we're getting right into the presence of God. In fact, we are. What started perfect and pure and right, broken by sin through our generations, God made a promise to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. Now we've been here for so long. He's called us out. And now we have restored back the original design. In their minds, they would say, this is it, right? And so guarding that form of worship would be of the utmost importance. If you weren't looking forward to Christ, if you didn't have the rest of the story, if you didn't know that it was an image and a shadow of what is to come, that would be it. And if you read the last chapter of Exodus, it's basically this great summary chapter. Moses takes all of what Bezalel has made. He takes all of the curtains, all of the things. He puts it all together, and it says, and then Moses finished the work. It's kind of this great conclusion of we started in chaos. We started in slavery. God's brought us out. We now have access back to him. What's amazing is as he built the tabernacle, it says the glory of God filled the whole space so that they couldn't even enter. The cloud was so thick. And whenever the cloud would leave, that was their sign, it's time for us to move somewhere else. And they'd pack it all up, and then they'd follow the cloud, and then they would set it back up wherever they were led. And so the form of worship, for us, we go, these descriptions of pomegranates and cubits and all of these things are hard for us to get our mind around. Do you see what God has done? He's brought his people out so that they can once again have access to him and be his people. And he is their God. And that is a megaphone to every other nation. There is a God, Jehovah, who does great things for his people and wants to reconcile. And so all of that is tapestry for us. Like Rob said, if my encouragement would be after reading through Exodus, maybe to read through the book of Hebrews and to see how much overlap and overlay there is. The gospel writers saw Jesus as the sacrifice that for all time, Jesus is the sacrifice that now gives us entrance into dwelling with God once again. He is the one. The Word became flesh and dwelt. The word literally is tabernacled. Jesus tabernacled on earth among us. He set up his tent where the presence of God was. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. So glory filled the tabernacle when God's presence was there. John saying, Jesus is the tabernacle. He came and dwelt, and we've seen his glory. God's glory filled his life. We saw it, and we moved with him. We saw what God was doing among the nations. A little bit from the book of Hebrews. The writer of Hebrews is trying to get this point across of the more better, the mo beta. The point in what we're saying is this: we have a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, a minister in the holy places, in the true tent. Again, there's the word tabernacle. Jesus is the true priest in the true tabernacle that the Lord set up, not man. And so as we read through Exodus, as you read through those pages, instead of getting lost in the minutiae and in all the details, you go, I'm not crafty like Bezalel. I don't know what all these measurements mean. I don't know what they're getting after. This is what they're trying to point to. God calling his people out to him to be his people and for him to dwell in their midst and for them to walk with him and to know him, that all the nations would see that and fear God and come to know him. And you start to hear that this is a with me idea. God desperately wants his people to be with him, to draw near to him, to have this relational closeness. And it's not about, did you wear the robe the right way and were your curls on your hair long enough to do all that stuff? All the things that we as humans get lost in, as soon as we hear of structures and organization, we go, is it that? What is that? No, that's not what it was after. The whole point was to point to, we now have access back to God. A way can be made. And obviously it was imperfect because they had to keep offering the sacrifices. The blood of bulls and goats do not take away sin. It was a reminder that there needs to be a final and a full sacrifice for sin. So my encouragement is that this would not be an archaic idea of, man, I got through Exodus 19. I think I'll just flip ahead to Joshua. I'm kind of a movie action buff. I just like the action pieces. There's something rich here that God is doing. Think about this. I don't even know. I was just thinking about this morning. That imagery of two angels guarding the garden, the two cherubim guarding the tabernacle. What was the first thing the disciples saw at the empty tomb? Two angels. The presence of God. Do you see the rich tapestry that God is weaving of his desire to be with his people? I don't know if that even lines up or not, but it just stood out to me that that's another occurrence, and the presence of God was right there. And so we have this idea, and this is the best way I can think of it in my analogy brain, is the horse and the cart, okay? And we say, this part of the Bible, it feels very hard to get through. It feels like I'm grinding it. It feels religiosity, all these commands and all. But what we're looking at is the cart. We're looking at what follows behind what God has said and what who he is and what it's expressing in his power, okay? And so often our human brains go to, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? We go to the cart. What has God said that I have to? And we ignore completely what God himself has done and what he is doing in the world. If we just get lost in the, well, it says that the tabernacle had to have this kind of sacrifice and that you had to wash your hands this many times, and we just get narrowed in on these, what do I have to do? Well, it says if you share the gospel this way, then maybe you're not sharing the full gospel, and maybe we just get narrowed in so small on what do I have to do. And yet God says, this is a with me thing. My activity has paved the way for you to come out of slavery. And now I want you to join with me your life, your heart, your passions to what I'm doing. Your activity for God always follows the activity that God himself has already started. We don't auto-generate. We don't engineer what God is doing in this world. We follow after what he's started. And that's what the tabernacle and the rest of Exodus is doing. What God has started to overthrow the serpent, to overthrow the devil. So in our New Testament, full story, we've got the whole book. We always let our gospel identities, what Jesus has done, lead the way through what we practice. When we break bread together, it isn't so that you might get acceptable again to God. It isn't so that the box is checked that God goes, well, you're staying on track. You've got a B+ right now, but just keep it up and maybe you'll get enough and we'll get it up to an A. That's not why we do those things. It's because there's a new identity that he's formed in us as his people, that we remember what he's done. That itself. Another way of thinking it is that we are always on the heels of receiving first. We always receive first, and then we join and walk and do. And that's what this tabernacle part of Exodus is expressing. God saying, I've done all this for you. Millions of people with lots of chariots and horses and lots of power mean nothing to me. I can overthrow it all. And I have for you guys in the Egyptians. Now walk with me. Receive from me what I've done and now walk with me and be my people. So I just want to go through this morning. Just, are you aware of, are you receiving daily, reminding yourself in these gospel identities of what God has done for you? Are you letting your cart be tied to Jesus' horse for your life? Or are you just sitting in a cart and you're trying to do a lot of stuff and it's going nowhere and you go, man, this whole religion thing doesn't work. Exactly. You've got to tie it to something with actual power and with actual life, which is God. That we've been born again. We've been born anew. There's a new spirit within us. We now have an option. Before we were born again, all we had was flesh. There was no battle. It was, should I live in the flesh or should I live in the flesh? Now we get the option. Can I live in the spirit today or the battle of the flesh? You've been born anew to this honor of choosing to walk in that spirit. We are sons of God. I lowercased it because there's one son of God, capital. But we are sons of God. We have that same inheritance. Jesus looks at us as his brothers. He says, I am going to my God and to your God. Does it, when you think of Jesus, do you go, that's my brother? I don't have the adoption as a slave, as a lesser than. God has brought me into his family. I've been given the spirit of adoption as his son. You are a branch on the vine. Do you know that you have access to all of the power the vine, Jesus, is? That you can bear much fruit in your life. You can bear much fruit today. November 2021, God's desire is that you would bear much fruit as you connect your life to him. That you've been given this identity as an intercessor, as a royal priest, as Adam and Eve were priests to creation, as the Levites were priests to the people. We are now royal priests. What's Paul's thought when he says, this is how the gospel sounds? It's be reconciled to God. 2 Corinthians 5, be reconciled to God. That's our heart's cry to this world. Be reconciled to God. Come back to him. And be reconciled to God is not get your act together and come to our church because our church is the best. Be reconciled to God is you're standing opposite his ways, opposite him. Your identity is found in all of what you do and what you can accomplish. Turn, be reconciled, face him, see him. be transformed. We have these identities as servants now. We get to serve God, member of his body. All of these things are the horse of our lives, of what Jesus has done. We receive these things. You do not add to these things. We cannot add to these things. We receive them, and then from there, we attach our cart of what God wants to do in this world. Right? We attach our lives, and we walk with him. The first step, Jesus says, he says, is to be baptized, to show this new thing that's happened is that you've been brought from death to life. Have you been baptized? Have you been taken that first step to show, not to save you, not so that you get from a B to a B plus in God's mind, but showing this new identity that he's given you, attaching your life to his. That's why we break bread. Again, it's all of this attaching ourselves to him that God would, we would be his people. He would be our God. He would dwell and his glory would be seen in this world. That's what he's after. As we devote ourselves, as it says in Acts, to the apostles' teaching, to what those who follow Jesus wrote. And this is what's fun about when you see things like The Chosen and you see the real life examples, whether they are like that or not. I don't know if Matthew was really like, you know, this all the time. But to see, these were just real people. They had personality. They had their flaws. They were like you or I. And yet they were caught up. They attached their cart to Jesus. They were called and they received that mantle as apostles. And now we follow what they've shared about him. In praise and worship and prayer, confession, listening, in being in a relational community. And we could give a whole, I could give a whole nother message just about the breakdown of community in our culture, in our structure of Western living. It's just completely falling apart through all these things. And so to just be in person and to give a hug and to smile and to say, I'm going to listen to a story and I'm going to hear how you're doing. It's what we're made for, to be part of the people of God, to be together. Do not give up meeting together, as is the habit of some. That word habit is ethos. There's an ethos of the world that would say, you don't need to gather. It's fine. You could probably get it through other things. If you maybe have your own little group, you know, coffee on Tuesdays, and that's kind of your church. Or mountains. Mountains are my church. That's where I go. Goes, no, that's not our ethos as the people of God. Our habit is meeting together, being together as the people of God, serving each other, loving each other. That's the cart that we attach to the horse of what Jesus has done in the gospel. So it's this idea that you read all throughout the New Testament. As you received Christ Jesus, so walk in him. You received something, you started something, what God did. Now we join our lives with him and we live this life together with him. And that's what the tabernacle is all about. So as you look at the beginning of the story, the garden, the presence of God dwelling, what that video shared, you look at the very end, what was God's goal for all of humanity? What's the big idea? Is that God would have a people, they would be his people, he would be their God, he would dwell in their midst, they would be together, and there'd be perfect communion, perfect connection, perfect relationship. New heaven, new earth. First heaven and the first earth passed away, the sea was no more. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. That is the end game of God. A people that walk with him, he is their God, and perfect dwelling together. Everything you could ever want and need, together as that people with God. And that's why the tabernacle is so important. The parts we're so prone to look over and say, this is pretty boring, I don't get it. What's the deal with the ribbons? This is the big idea. This is what God is after. And today, you get to be his people. That's the offer. Does that feel valuable to you? Does that feel worth your time? Putting your shoes on and driving your car to go do that and to be that and to engage and participate in that. To be in that relational community that the nations would know, that every name, every tongue, every tribe, every language would know. This is your maker. This is your redeemer. This is the one who wants to draw you into that holiest of places. And so, church, that's the high calling we get. They guarded this tabernacle things with their lives because they knew how important it was. And I fear in our culture there's just a flippancy that we have with, well, if you want to celebrate the Lord's Supper or not, or if you want to gather for church or not, go, no, this is so important. So important to God's heart, to be his people, and to walk with him in that. And that's ultimately, if you look at the book of Exodus, it's kind of like the book of Genesis starts with God in the garden there. The book of Exodus ends with God having this access restored. Obviously, it was in a perfect way. But he brought it back into that place of, you now have access back to me. It was imperfect. It was not full. But it started that renewal that Jesus fully consummated. So as we get and finish this book, just to see, God's plan has not changed. He didn't say, I'm going to be a certain way in Exodus and Leviticus that's really hard to get to know. I'm going to kind of be a weird God that you don't really get to know very well. It's kind of weird, the things I say. But then when Jesus comes, it's exciting, and we'll make movies about that stuff. And his plan has always been the same. And that's what he's after. And that's what we get to participate in. That's what we have become inheritors of. We are in that. So it's a great honor. Jesus, pray that you would help us to see that honor and to not treat with flippancy the things that you've done. I am so grateful that you are a perfect high priest, that you are the offering, that you are the altar, that your body was the curtain that was torn, that you are the perfect fulfillment of all that we read. And I just want to commit again and anew to attaching my part of my life to what you are doing and who you are. What you've said is true of me now. I pray that each of us would let your gospel identities be the ruling, reigning truth in our hearts. Would you please transform our hearts to live in those identities, to have those be our first cause of receiving, and that we would be, along with all the rest of your people, your people. God, we would draw near to you. We would walk with you. We would be connected, and we would cry out to this world, please be reconciled to God. Please turn again and see that his disposition is grace and love. Pray that would be our heart's cry as your people. In your name, amen.